Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association, coming to you today from Berlin and the 2019 European Compliance and Ethics Institute. I'm joined today by Drago Kos. Drago is the chair of the OECD Working Group on Bribery. Drago, thanks for joining us and thanks for starting the conference today with a great keynote session.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be at your conferences, especially talking with devoted professionals as your guys are.
Thank you. Now, your session today was really great. I think there were a lot of terrific insights. I was tweeting as we went along, and a lot of people were liking and forwarding the messages. Let's start out by something I think which was a little bit dismaying that you talked about, which was the lack of follow-up and by a lot of countries. I think you said, what was it, of the 22 out of 44 have not done anything?
Correct, yes. And this is really our biggest disappointment, you know, having half of a group not being willing to detect or investigate one single case of foreign bribery, and we're talking really countries which are part of G7 group. It is really disappointing. And whatever we do, we're not very successful in pushing them to get there. Of course, the align legislation to our standards. They align institutions to our standards, but just legislation institutions without proper enforcement, they will not change anything. That's why we put so much emphasis on the enforcement. Fortunately, on the other end, the number of countries which are really enforcing the convention is rising, slowly though, but it's rising. But the first half, the most problematic countries, it's really problematic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is interesting, the ones that are doing it, you know, we've all seen the fact that they're actually working with each other, that you're getting much more multinational settlements for some of these cases, which has been, I think, an encouraging sign on the anti-corruption front and certainly sends an important message out to the business community and to also the bribe takers that, look, you may face prosecution from 2, 3, 4 countries at the same time. Now, one of the issues that you raised that is one I hadn't fully thought of is the interplay between rising nationalism and anti-corruption enforcement, and that it's actually been something that's held back the anti-corruption movement.
And this is, currently the biggest concern I have, especially here in Europe, because the things which are happening, that so many things is being, covered by nationalism, exposing the national sovereignty, the national rights, decreasing the influence of the European or global community, is really worrying. We spent decades of building a joint front against corruption. And now, from different reasons, we have countries which say, we don't care about that anymore. We are self-sufficient. We will do what we think is good, and they, with the ease which nobody would expect, they back off from the existing standards which already adopted. The countries which are really, leading the trail in this area, are really problematic. And I speak strictly about corruption or anti-corruption. Are really problematic because we see that. Behind this nationalism, we see so many bad things happening. They're changing the substantial laws, watering down their provisions, or even going directly against international legal instruments. They're changing procedural rules in the way that, the police forces and prosecutors simply cannot investigate and prosecute cases anymore. Thereafter, the measures of the most effective anti-corruption institutions, they're chasing them out, even trying to undermine their international careers, for the future. So, and if you really analyze those things thoroughly, you always come to the conclusion that, you know, it's never nationalism per se, which is the most important thing here. It's always nationalism which has some, reason behind. And in our area, in the area of anti-corruption, this nationalism is nothing else but protecting the current holders of political powers away from any form of liability for what they do back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely one of the things that, as much as we're hearing all the talk about nationalism, I really hadn't seen the connection so strongly between corruption and nationalism. Now, one of the things that you mentioned that I have to say sort of led to a chicken and the egg argument, which comes first and which came second, was you had said, what was it? Trust leads to...
High trust means less corruption.
So my question is, does high trust mean less corruption, or does less corruption lead to higher trust?
Well, that's exactly the problem. You see, things are not simple. The last one which you mentioned, less corruption does not necessarily lead to higher trust. But for sure, higher trust leads to less corruption, which means if we want to fight corruption, we have to work on the trust issue first. And of course, this is a complicated thing, you know, especially in big companies or big countries, because the same rules apply for both. Where there's less trust is more corruption. So how to enhance trust? Trust of employees into their managers, trust of the citizens into their politicians. And at the company's level, it is still a bit more simple than at the national level. And we can get there with, let's say, persistent long-term activities in the area of, let's say, respecting employees' rights, treating them as they deserve to be treated, without any favoritism and similar things. So when employees start to believe that their managers are really honest personalities with high level credibility, which will never apply corruption, either within companies or, let's say, getting into contrast with external counterparts, then they will follow the example and they will start to behave exactly the same way. And normally corruption will go down.
Right. So basically, by making sure people in the organization are in an environment where principled behavior is expected, it ends up having a positive effect in terms of the less willingness to pay bribes and then ultimately less likelihood of people expecting them. Now, you mentioned that the OECD is working on a new guidance document, I believe. What's that likely to encompass?
Well, formally, this will be the revised version of our 2009 recommendation. Substantially, for the last year, we are collecting the inputs of our governments, what they would like to see in the document. And we really got so many good ideas. And right now, we just started the open consultation process. So it means we'll get even more ideas from the external world, NGOs, companies, and so on. And then in June this year, we'll have to make a decision what to include into the new standards. Of course, we will not be able to include everything because then it would be too much. But hopefully, at least what we will get will be, let's say, some standards on whistleblowing, public and private sector, non-trial resolutions, which is the term which we now use instead of settlements. We hopefully will get something to enhance our international cooperation because we see that the flow of information is very low. Information is not being exchanged. Cooperation is at a very low level. We hope to get something, some positive incentives for companies to put really effective compliance systems in place. We are dreaming about including the demand side of the bribery too. So we will not be able only to deal with supply side, but also with the officials who are taking bribes and so on. So those are the most important issues. Of course, it is the group who makes the decision, so I don't know what the group will say. The problem is that some of the most important countries and group are changing their, let's say, attitude and approach. So I really don't know what will happen in June, but I will be pushing hard for the topics which I've mentioned.
So, and is there a way for people to submit comments still, or is the comment period closed?
No, we just open it.
Oh, okay.
At our website at the OECD, www.oecd.org, you can find a link to the public consultation process. And at least until, we say, mid-May, it will be possible to send us inputs.
Comments.
Yeah,
great.
And we will appreciate all of them.
All right, we'll add a link to the blog post that accompanies this to make it easier for anyone who wants to do that to submit one. So let's close in the few minutes we have left in terms of what did your last series of reports on countries and what their activities have reveal?
Well, we just had a meeting last week and we dealt with Peru for the first time. And we found many inefficiencies in their law. But knowing the, let's say, the engagement of Peruvian authorities, I don't have a doubt that they will fix them. They have 2 years now. Then we dealt with two follow-ups to the phase four reports with United Kingdom and Finland. And we are really surprised, let's say, that how many recommendations they have implemented. Of course, there are still issues to be dealt with, mainly on the practical level, but those two countries are really, well, you can always do better, but they're doing fine. We had a case of Turkey where we were extremely unsatisfied with the level of their engagement. And we also had the case of another country, which is Canada, where we also discussed the current events going on there. And we decided we will make a public statement on it, just to show that we are following closely what is going on. So it's interesting. We deal with different countries at different level of development and with a different level of engagement in the enforcement of the convention. But all the countries which I mentioned, basically, it's work in progress. Mm-hmm. One of them, some of them at the beginning, some of them closer to the, let's say, the second part. I cannot say to the end. But it's moving on.
Yeah, and I think that's to be expected. I mean, the expectations of society keep rising. You know, people find what works, what doesn't. You know, the work in progress, you know, I think one of the things OECD's been good about is that even countries that are the most aggressive in the prosecutions, like the US or Germany, you've pointed out other things that they could and should be doing. And by constantly setting the bar higher, I think you do the world a good service. And by the same token, the willingness of the OECD to say, no, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Certainly, it's hard for countries to sit back and say, well, you know, it doesn't really matter, especially since so many want to be a member of the OECD. And then actually, apropos of that, you made me think of one thing is that, you know, you pointed out that even in some of the cleanest countries in the world, like the Scandinavian countries, we've lately seen a bunch of scandals that certainly shows that no country can afford to rest on its laurels and feel as if they've done a good job and they've got it covered.
Well, you're right. You see, my experience is very simple. When whichever country in the world decides to engage more, they will start to find more cases, which means cases out there. It only depends on the countries, how much they're willing to detect them, investigate them. So Scandinavian countries are always at the top of all the list of non-corrupt countries, but this does by far does not mean that they don't have any corruption cases. They do. It's just it's a question how much they're willing to deal with them. And since we are putting really a lot of emphasis on the international cooperation, for us it's very simple. If they will not be working those cases themselves, some other jurisdictions from our group will. And then, of course, we will ask them a very simple question. Why couldn't you detect them by yourselves?
Right. And why weren't you a part of the subsequent investigation, potentially, too? So anyway, well, Drago, thanks for sharing your expertise with us, both in this podcast and at the general session this morning. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.